It's not the best app.
Microsoft, man, what do you expect?
I was going to say it's not the worst, but I bit my tongue.
Yeah. Tony, can you hear me okay? Because I know at the time I recorded, my sound was really quiet.
Jordan, can you speak up a bit? Jordan?
Hello. Very funny.
Jordan, come in, Jordan.
For a second there, I thought, is he joking? Is he not?
Your sound seems fine.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah. This is Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTMPodcast or at Q Broadcasting. You can find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q.am. Enjoy the show. Yelloey, and welcome to episode 23 of Back to the Mac. It's a show about Mac stuff. We don't do iOS. This week I've got, who have I got? I've got Jordan Merrick. Hello, Jordan.
Hello, Johnny.
And I've got Dr. Richard Harkness. How are you?
Hello, I'm fine, thanks.
Jolly good. Thanks very much for filling in for the last couple of weeks. I think between you two and Jacob, you've been keeping the show rolling, haven't you? Okay, we talked about the Paul O'Grady coffee situation where somebody had bid, was it $610,000 a week or two ago? And I said I was quite happy to have coffee with anybody who'd like to put a bid in. And I think Richard gave an update last week that Jose Reyes had bid 22 pence. And for our American listeners, that works out as bugger all. Well, Jose, you're still the high bidder, so I think we're going to close this auction probably next week. So you're welcome to pop down to Brighton, and for 22 pence, I'll buy you a cup of coffee. It really doesn't sound like a good deal to me, or for that matter, to Jose, I'm sure. But anyway, let's get on with the show. Well, it's been a taxing time for Apple, hasn't it?
They're under the hammer again, aren't they, with the Senate this time? Tim Cook in the dock.
So the Senate essentially saying that Apple has paid little or no taxes on $74 billion of revenue in the last 4 years through technicalities and using AOI, which is Apple Operations International, based in Ireland. What do you think about this?
It's legal, and they're a corporate company and a massive one at that, and they've probably got some of the best finance people in the world. So I haven't got any qualms with it personally. Sorry. You know, if that's the legal loophole that exists in the States, it's up to the government, just like it is in this country, I think.
So is this just a case of this is a hugely successful company making a lot of money, is efficient with its financial operations? It's a multinational anyway. Are they using their status, their size to avoid taxes? Do you think, Jordan?
Yes, absolutely.
You think they are?
I don't think they're using their size as a way to avoid paying tax. Sorry, I misheard the question. I thought you meant the government using them as an excuse.
Yes.
What I was going to say is Apple had this scheme set up in Ireland since 1980 for their offshore finances or however they do it. I tried to watch an hour or so of it today on the live stream and couldn't understand anything that was being said.
But that's because they're American, Jordan.
There was the language barrier, definitely.
Even just reading it, I'm lost half the time.
I know I don't understand Jacob half the time.
Well, one of the things they mentioned was what they've had in operation is largely unchanged and was something they set up in 1980. So the American government have never mentioned any of this before, but all of a sudden, now Apple has been the most profitable company in the world for an X number of years. Now it's seen as, wait a minute, you may owe us a bit more tax than you've been paying. But as Rich said, it's legal. And at the end of the day, if they're exploiting a loophole, then if they're exploiting a loophole that's legal to do so, then that is up to the government to fix. It sounds bad, and they are keeping taxpayers' money away, but like some of the celebrities and companies over here, at the end of the day, if it's legal, then I think all of us would probably prefer to pay less tax if we could get away with it.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems to be in the case in the UK for the last couple of years. The Vodafones, the Starbucks, the Amazons, of the Googles of this world, multinational companies, you know, shipping their coffee through that, you know, big coffee producing nation called Switzerland in order to minimise taxes. All they're based in Luxembourg, you know, for VAT, where it's only 15% compared to 20% in the UK and 25% in Scandinavia. This is just being efficient and maximising profits for shareholders, isn't it? It's all legal.
Yeah, definitely. But
is it just fashionable now? The government, maybe it goes deeper than this. The government's realised that, you know, their light touch regulation on banking allowed this mis-selling of collateralised debt obligations around the world. Suddenly, the whole financial system starts to implode. They want to start looking like hard men now. They're going after these big multinationals who have been doing nothing wrong, legally speaking, but are now trying to save face by saying, hey, you're not being moral in your approach of you know, it might be legally correct, but it's not morally justified that you're not paying as much tax as we think you should be. Perhaps the governments are just trying to save face a little bit here.
I don't think morals come into it when you're talking about a business. Well, sorry, it's all about the bottom line, isn't it? You know,
well, this is what our politicians would seem to have us believe at the moment, isn't it? With you know, all these big companies like Amazon and Google who, you know, pay very little tax on their profits.
I'm not making any judgment morally about whether it's right or not. I completely understand, you know, if any business or an individual for that matter doesn't really want to pay tax. So if you can, you know, if you can legally brush that to one side then, or minimise it, why would you not take that opportunity?
Well, indeed. So perhaps it's just the case, as Paul O'Grady's been saying in the Senate this afternoon, that, you know, the government needs to simplify the tax code, you know, and charge less tax in order to ensure more funds are repatriated to the United States. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I think that makes sense. If people are taking it, I'm sure Apple do not want to take their money out of the US. And much like probably some,
but that's interesting, because Tim Cook is saying that he's not taking money out of the US. He's saying that the tax they pay abroad, or the money they're not sending back, the money they're holding abroad, is earnings on operations abroad.
Yeah, one of the things they did with this is that the dividend scheme, where they're basically buying back a load of their own stock to increase this. Funds back to the shareholders, etc. But one of the things they could have done, because Apple is a company that operate on pretty much zero debt, they could have brought money back to do this. It was, I think, $2 billion or something they were going to do. Rather, if there's a repatriation tax where any earnings you bring back into the US, I believe, is under the 35% tax bracket, which is the highest in the world. So rather than do that, Apple issued a debt against themselves, so they ended up paying something like 2%.
Yeah, I think it's 2.8%. Yeah. Instead of 35% or so on repatriating funds.
Exactly. And I think that's what triggered off all of this, you know, this Senate hearing. But at the end of the day, that's not bad. That's just good business sense, surely. If companies like Google and Vodafone are avoiding paying tax here in the UK, and, you know, there's a big ruckus at the moment about those companies paying almost nothing, I don't blame the companies. I blame the governments that have been able to allow these companies to do that. It's yep. their system, it's their loopholes. If people can exploit these loopholes, then fix them.
And I think that that's a situation that isn't exclusive to the US. It certainly seems to be the issue with the tax system in the UK as well. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, that whole subject's a bit too taxing for me anyway. And I'd come up with a headline for this: Apple's cook roasted by US Senate over taxing situation. But I didn't get that in at the beginning. So let's move on to Google and something about an app launcher coming to the Mac. What's this all about?
Well, I just picked this up, but it's I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but there's something called Chromium that you can get in the App Store, I believe. And within that, you know, going to get an app launcher, which it basically looks like a little thing that sits in your dock at the bottom, and then it pops up from there with all your Google related apps within it. So it's sort of bringing them all together, basically, as far as I can see. I don't know if it provides more than that, but I just thought it was an interesting little thing because it seems like another little, what's the word? Trojan horse, as you termed it, Johnny, for Google to get into the Apple ecosystem.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because with recent changes on the iOS platform, of which we never discuss on this show,
nope.
Apple has removed staples of the iPhone, such as YouTube and Google Maps, you know, which really were a big part of the iPhone's success, a big part mm-hmm. of its functionality, I thought. I had a situation just a few days ago. I needed to walk from a coffee shop to somebody's house. It wasn't far, but I knew where to go. I knew the route. I just wanted to know how long it was going to take me to walk, because mm-hmm. then I could sit there drinking tea for a little longer. Siri and Apple Maps just could not find the route. It was basically, you know, straight down the road, turn right. And it just mm-hmm. could not calculate the route. I had to download the Google Maps app and find out there that it was going to take me 11 minutes to walk. Yeah. So I've reverted to Google once more. Now, this app launcher from Google, as far as I can see, it's allowing people to launch their favorite web-based applications. And it shows here a number of Google products such as Gmail, YouTube, Google Drive, Google Search, and so on. Is this just for Google Apps, or is it for other apps as well?
It looks like it's just for the Google app, so it's very similar to the start page of Google Chrome. So when you open that and you've got the options to load Gmail or YouTube, it looks like Launchpad for Google Apps, where it'll just open up in a web page. I suspect yep. it will open up them up in Google Chrome. Like you said before, it's more of a Trojan horse, a way to get people into those apps and sort of remove the disconnect between it being a web app and it being a native app. So for an average user, they'd probably install this and see it as no different than, oh, well, I have a Gmail app, I have a YouTube app on my Mac, and it's actually just launching Chrome. Whether or not it's a special window that will only show that app like Fluid does with you know, single site browsers, or whether it just launches Chrome anyway and it's nothing more than a bunch of shortcuts, I, you know, couldn't tell you at this time, but it, you know, it's definitely interesting. It's definitely a way to get more of the apps into there, including probably Hangout.
So what this is doing is, this is presenting a little icon in the dock in a similar way that your applications folder on the right-hand side of the dock works. You can click on that and see all your applications. You click on this icon from Google and it loads up these different Google services, acting as shortcuts to those. It's a pretty smart move by Google, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Like I said before, especially with Hangouts, which has just launched. And although the Chrome extension is great, I'd prefer it to be a separate app completely. I don't want to have Chrome open to access it. If you could use Hangouts through your dock, for example, if that was an ability, but yeah, definitely that'd be great to do that. I mean, you know, we've started to use Hangouts now, and overall, it's, you know, it's not there yet, but it's still a much better experience than iMessage. That's a way of getting more people onto it.
That's certainly the case. And I mean, it's very interesting. I find myself over the recent months increasingly moving towards Google products because the Apple products just aren't delivering. Taking away Save As, sticking everything in iCloud, making files associated with specific apps rather than file formats you can open in a number of different apps. It's taking a lot of the functionality away from the user that the desktop user has been used to for two or three decades now. Smartphones, I can understand they're wanting to bring some of the ideas, the ways of working, that simplifying things over to the desktop. But isn't it just a case of dumbing down sometimes?
Yes, but it's the problem with Apple's apps is it's always reliant on you having your Mac or your iPhone, and they're your devices you use the apps with. You know, they're proper native apps that you use to access them. With Google's ecosystem, it's very much a, we build these apps, we build these web apps, use them on whatever device you want. If you want to use it on a Mac or a Windows machine or an iPhone or an Android device, whatever, you can do it through a web browser. So in a way, it's less restrictive. So it is open to more users. Someone on a PC who's switching to a Mac is going to have a much easier time if they use Gmail through the website than if they're going to have to load up their, you know, their contacts in the address book and then set mail up. Some people don't want to do that, especially with the state that Microsoft Office is on the Mac. The last thing you want to do is use Outlook on the Mac. So if they're using Gmail already, this is an absolutely great way of letting somebody switch to the Mac or continue using that and realize their favorite Google apps are still there. You know, they're not going anywhere.
I'll go a step further with that as well, Jordan. I think the other thing is the more that you get yourself entrenched into doing things with all these Google products, the much, much easier it's going to be for you to tiptoe over to Android, isn't it?
And so this is what Google wants.
Yep. So you'll start putting your eggs into their basket instead. And they're making it very easy for people to do it, I've got to say.
Well, I'll tell you something. In recent months, I found myself using Google Drive, as it's now called, Google Docs, as it was before.
Yeah, it's really good.
I now refuse to install Microsoft Office. Jordan talks about using Outlook on your Mac and that being a terrible experience. I refuse even to install Microsoft Office on my Mac because that is a horrible experience.
Yeah.
Each time there's a security update, it's 200 megabytes, which is a third of the actual program that you're installing. It's just not. It takes ages to fire up when you click on an icon. It's bloatware of the highest order. It's nasty, and the whole world depends upon Microsoft Word and Excel, and I don't like it. And I think Google Drive is fantastic. If you want simple word processing, let's face it, most people writing letters or whatever they do with word processors need a little bit of formatting. They need the different emphasis. They need the bullet points or the numbers. They need the justification. Google Docs gives you that. My mother wanted Microsoft Office on her Mac. I showed her Google Docs. She said, "Oh no, that's fine. That's just what I need."
Yeah, exactly.
It's the analogy Jordan made a few weeks ago. It's like using Photoshop to crop a photo.
Yeah. Or take a red eye out.
Yeah, it's just overkill.
So, it's amazing to me, actually, when I looked at that, I was like, good God, that's all the word processing functionality I need. I don't need anything more than
I think that probably applies to an awful lot of people. Sure, there are going to be some power users out there that need the advanced functionality of Microsoft Word. Yeah. And, you know, they should have that option. But I think, you know, the world needs to realize that you don't need this expensive, clunky software in order to type a letter.
Yeah.
Apple, I hope you're listening.
Well, just before we move on as well, more than switching to Android, Android is a gateway to using Google services. So because Android is open source for other manufacturers to use, Google don't make any money with Android. They make money on the people using Android and their services, which is why Google started the whole system. So as we all know, Google make their money through advertising and through other forms of revenue where the user is the product, effectively. This is another way of letting people access Gmail, Google Calendar, or whatever. Google can still learn about the person and target ads towards them and get them using their ecosystem, but it makes it a lot easier for people to do that. And if someone was on a Mac who was, you know, wanting to use iCloud, wanting to use Google services or whatever, with something like this, they're going to use Google services anyway if they're already using them. Google can't target you. They can't make any money through you if you're using third-party apps, but you're using Google services. It's much easier for them to do it when you're accessing their website. So for them as well, it's a way to make money. It's a way to keep people using their systems.
Do you think also, Jordan, that this could increase the popularity of products like the Chromebook?
I don't know. I mean, it's a good idea in theory, but you're effectively walking around with a £1,500 edition of Google Chrome. You're still limited to the restrictions you have with Google Chrome. So short of not being connected to the internet, what else can you do with it? I don't think you can edit photos on it. I don't think you can synchronize music to an MP3 player or play games on it beyond, say, a Flash game or whatever. So I like the Google, I like the idea and the concept of the Chromebook, but I just don't see how it works in practice. I've never used one personally, but and I am going off other people's reviews and opinions of it. But to me, it is just a large Google Chrome browser with a great screen that is very, very expensive to buy. You know, you can buy a better PC or a better Mac for that, which will do a lot more. You can develop on that. Chromebook, I don't think you can even develop Android apps if you wanted to as well. So it's a very expensive toy.
It's only 300 quid.
I'm thinking of the Pixel one. I think.
Right, don't get carried away.
You know, Jordan, he only likes screen. The best.
I think that one doesn't make any sense, but for £300 for an average family, it probably does most of what you're ever going to want it to do.
I think so, but if you're going to offer to an average family a £300 Chromebook or an iPad or an iPad Mini,
yeah,
or even an Android tablet, even something like the Nexus 7, they're probably going to want to go for a tablet
instead. Yeah,
but I think the £300 Chromebook was more of a probably a proof of concept. You know, it didn't sell very well, but maybe Google didn't want it to in the first place.
Mm.
Well, certainly with Gmail and Google Drive, Google's Trojan horse is certainly working with me. I do find myself using their products more and more, even though I'm using Macs day to day. Let's move on then. Apple CEO Paul O'Grady says Made in USA Mac will be assembled in Texas. Who wants to tell us about this? Neither of you then.
Kind of says it all, doesn't it, really? It was just
Should we move on then?
You know, it was just an interesting little tidbit that came out of that Senate hearing, was that you mentioned that's where these made in the USA Macs are going to be made, and there's some speculation that's because I think they have a Foxconn plant in Texas, so which is one of the companies that Apple uses, isn't it, for putting their Macs together. So there you go.
Okay. Let's move on then. Richard, I think that this is one of your suggestions. The situation with the Mac Pro is that people have been holding out for what seems like decades for Apple to update the Mac Pro. You can't even buy the Mac Pro in Europe anymore because the propeller inside might cut your fingers off if you stick your hand in there, which would be a remarkably stupid thing to do and would probably earn you a nomination for a Darwin Award, quite frankly.
I'd love to see that genius bar, is it?
Yeah. I can't believe it.
So, you know, people have got all these old Mac Pros knocking around, don't know what to do. I mean, you can stand them up, you can stick a cushion on the top, you can make a seat out of it. I've seen that done. There's a cafe in Brighton where they do that.
Make seats out of them.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's cool.
When I used to work in London at for an IT company, we had so many old G5s, we ended up making a full three-piece suite, a table, and a few extra seats for an office party as well. they're not the most comfortable things to sit on, especially with the carrier bars at the top, but yeah, they stack into a nice coffee table.
Yeah. So, Richard, I think this is yours. Tell us what to do with an old Power Mac G5.
Turn it into a barbecue grill. I thought this is quite funny, especially given that everyone's waiting to get a new Mac Pro, and it looks quite bizarre as well. Obviously, because the older Power Mac G5s are made mainly, well, almost entirely out of an aluminium, aren't they? So there's instructions on Cult of Mac as to how you could do that, but you basically just gut the innards out and move a bit of the aluminium around and then fill it with coals and whatever else you need, and then you whack your meat and what have you on the grill part of the on the side of it. So
that's going to be totally useless for the UK.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be rained out every time, isn't it?
Well, it's not just the rain. I mean, we're 21st of May. We're exactly 1 month away from Midsummer's Day, and it's going to be about 6 degrees this evening. 6 degrees centigrade. I've no idea what that is in Fahrenheit. Sorry, American listeners.
It's not enough, is it, basically?
No, what is it? 50-ish? I don't know.
Maybe.
I'm guessing. So
it's just a bit of fun.
Perhaps we could adapt this idea a bit and actually have it inside the house in the UK to actually provide a bit of warmth.
Yeah. See, that's a good idea, but they missed a trick with this. You didn't need to strip out the innards and shove it full of coal. You just take the fans out and run a handbrake in code. That'll warm those chicken fans up no end. They got toasty enough just booting for OS 10.
Would you mind? There's a bit of me that has heard so many rumours about how hot these things get that I actually thought that's what they were doing. And I thought, no, that surely wouldn't be enough to do that. But yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
How hot do barbecues get, and what's the melting point of aluminium? Because it's got a lower melting point than steel, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm more concerned that these are powdered aluminium. They're actually spray painted with something, so I'd be worried when it's coming off. It's going to be a lot of carcinogens in these fumes.
That's a good point.
Well, luckily we won't ever get exposed to that risk due to the rain and temperature. Nobody will be doing this.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely okay.
Nice.
Okay, should we talk about Apple's best friend Samsung?
Samsung. It's just again something that I've quickly picked up on, and let me get the page so I've got the facts. Oh no, where have I gone? And I thought it was relevant with this. I can't provide you the link, but I have read somewhere this week that you know, obviously, there's a lot of people expecting some new MacBook Airs at WWDC this year. So, which would hardly be a shock, would it, if we did see it? But apparently, Samsung are beating Apple to the punch again by coming out with a 13-inch display that's higher resolution than even the Retina MacBook Pro.
Does it need to be though? Because if you've seen a Retina MacBook Pro, the you can't discern the individual pixels at a normal viewing distance. So is it really necessary to have a higher density of pixels if it already works?
Yeah, it's a good question.
I think as it gets to a certain point, you don't notice. I've been looking for a new TV for a while, since the one I've got is as old as time began and is struggling to stay on more often than not.
John Logiebird wants it back, does he?
He does, actually. He won't stop banging on about it. But one of the things I've been looking at is a plasma, which a few people have said is a great, great quality TV because the screen quality is great, but they're usually 720p, they're not 1080p. And the first thing I think of is, that's not as good as 1080p. That's not going to be very good. But most people say a 720p plasma is just as, if not, it's just as good, if not better, than a highest res LED, LCD display that you can get because it works in a slightly different way. So it's like the old gigahertz and, you know, there's processor speed. Now, you know, we don't pay attention to processor speed much anymore, but back in the day, 200 megahertz processor against 180 megahertz processor, it was a no-brainer. But I think, like you said, with the pixel density, it's just more of a case of one-upmanship now. It's, well, we've got a slightly higher, you know, PPI than you have. We, you know, ours is 276 and yours is only 227. But if we can't see it, then...
Well, that's an interesting point, isn't it, Jordan? Because, you know, Apple constantly goes on. It doesn't play the numbers game. It doesn't tell you the processor speed of an iPad or how the different numbers, you know... Samsung's claiming 276 pixels per inch compared to 227 on the 13-inch Retina MacBook. I mean, it's marginal anyway, that, isn't it?
You know someone is going to say, I can definitely see the pixels. I can definitely notice there's a difference there.
This is just tech industry top trumps, isn't it?
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
Where the difference comes in there is, I mean, obviously... You've got to remember that Retina is just a marketing term. It's not actually a thing that Apple have cleverly come up with that's stuck in everyone's minds, because that only applies if it's held at X distance. Don't ask me what the distance is, but it's only a certain distance. And if you pull the screen closer to you, then you might start to be able to start to see pixels. So if you're sitting on a, you know, I don't know, perhaps in a cramped airplane seat or something like that, maybe you can see the pixels when you're that close to it. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but definitely a first world problem. Definitely.
Wow. when I've looked at these in the Apple store, certainly out of my league at the moment, can't afford one. Yeah. But you know, looking at the screen, and same with the iPad. You look at the iPads 3 and 4, you think, nah, it's a gimmick. I don't need this Retina display. And you look at it in the store and you think, well, yeah, I can't see the pixels. It looks like a nice display. It's only when you have one of those alongside one of the older models that doesn't have Retina, you think, wow, this is actually quite something.
Mm.
It's difficult to go back to the non-Retina displays after using a Retina. I really just think this is a game of top trumps from Samsung. I don't think it makes any real difference at all, you know, to the user.
I guess the only thing that we don't know from this article is whether other things will be better about it, like, you know, the sort of, whatever you call it, colour saturation and the depth of the blacks and all that kind of thing and the refresh rate and what have you. So, you know, maybe along with having a higher pixel count, it might be better in other ways as well.
Well, I mean, this technology is moving forward all the time. You know, compare the screens that we use now. In fact, just compare the screen you're looking at now to a PC screen. You know, I never realised how good the display was on my iMac until I went back to using a PC laptop, which the PC laptop I had was £1,800 at the time, which is hugely expensive for a PC laptop. You know, Lenovo PC laptop. All the bells and whistles, super thin. The screen is atrocious compared to the Macs. We're very privileged.
With this Samsung laptop, I think it's good that Samsung have released it, and I think it is actually going to be a good product. Specifically because this is the first proper PC laptop that will have a high resolution display rather than Retina. And the Chromebook Pixel has been out with its ridiculous display, but Samsung's blurb mentions nothing about Apple, nothing about the MacBook Pro. I think it's very much a lot of press has jumped on it and instantly gone, Samsung, high-resolution display, they must be jumping onto the Apple bandwagon, or it's their version of the MacBook Pro. But it is good to see these high-resolution displays are becoming a bit more mainstream. I was worried that they were going to start to go the way of Thunderbolt, which, whilst Thunderbolt is great and is, you know, has a lot of great uses, it's still not adopted quite as wide as we'd like it to be. If you go on the Thunderbolt website, there's not that many products, and there's literally 4 or 5 different computers apart from Apple that support Thunderbolt. I'm worried it's going to go the way of FireWire 800, which, whilst it was very good, wasn't as popular unless it was on some of the pro machines at Apple. So with high resolution displays, it's good that they're becoming more and more mainstream, which would mean more and more competition for Apple to up their game. And then, you know, and therefore Apple to release better and better displays as time goes on.
Well, the other thing, just you made me think there, Jordan, is also, if that's the case, you might start seeing more and more content online being rendered at a higher resolution as well, because people have got the MacBook Pro quite often complain about how crappy a lot of websites look.
But well, this is something that's not talked about very much, isn't it? You know, having higher resolution images on websites generally means that the page size is going to be larger, which means that you're going to be downloading more, which means that you need faster internet connections, which means that because pages are now bloated, as we've been using broadband for a number of years, web developers aren't concentrating on lean pages. It's just more and more data that needs shifting to satisfy the users of these high-density displays.
Yeah. If you go into Apple's website, any picture you see at all, whether it's, you know, I'm on the Apple.com site at the moment and their main page has the iPad, 2 sizes do all, a generic poster picture or whatever. If you open the image in a new tab and then you have the image loaded, if you add _2x just before the file name, it'll show you the high resolution version, the Retina version. Some of them get to about 300 or 400K.
These are loaded
on all Retina devices, iPads and Macs. So if you're on a mobile 3G Retina iPad, you are going to get some serious bandwidth just by going on Apple's website.
Is this not just going to mean that Retina display users are going to have a slower internet experience than non-Retina users?
I think they're going to have a more expensive internet experience than anyone else.
Well, they've certainly got that from buying the device in the first place, haven't they?
Yeah. But it's just, it does show you quite the, you know, it is a substantial difference. It doesn't sound like much when you go, it's a slightly higher display. But when you have to double the pixel density, which means you're doubling the picture size, you know, if your picture's 800 by 600, that's, you know, 1600 by 1200. That's a huge picture. That's, you know, it's four times the picture in as many, you know, in the same area. So it's a lot of space. It's a lot of bandwidth that you're going to have to use.
It certainly is. Okay, the next section of the show, the team examines a recent piece of equipment or an app and discusses what it does, what's good and what's not so good. Then they vote whether it's hot or not. Who's got one for us this week?
So I put one in the show notes. This is the MagSafe adapter keyring, which started life, I think, as a Kickstarter on...
Doesn't everything these days?
Yeah, it's Kickstarter just tends to be, pay, you know, pay us for a product, and if you like it, we'll launch
it. We'll make it.
Yeah. Or a movie nowadays. But it's a great little keyring.
It's just the lean startup approach to manufacturing, isn't it?
It is. It's market research and getting your funds ready. But this little device, I can see it being a very good tool for anyone who uses a new laptop when old MacBook laptops are quite frequently. It's just a little keyring adapter where you can buy a £10 MagSafe to MagSafe 2 adapter for your new MacBook Pro. So if you've bought a Retina MacBook Pro, which comes with a MagSafe 2 adapter, but you've got a Thunderbolt display like you, Johnny, for example, where you've only got the MagSafe adapter on the power cable, or you have an existing MagSafe adapter, you can use this little £10 adapter and you can connect your old power supply to your new Mac. This little keyring is just a little attachment to keep that adapter with you at all times. It's kind of like a USB stick on your keyring, but completely detachable. It's quite nifty. Like I said before, it's not something I would use, but I can see someone using it quite a lot if they're constantly switching power supplies and they've got one at work. Would this be one either of you would ever use at any point? Do you have a MagSafe 2 computer?
I don't. Nope. So, no.
You're all right then.
Well, Richard's got a MacBook Air, haven't you?
Which uses the normal MagSafe, so...
No need for the adapter at the moment.
No.
But I suppose, you know, as we move on, you know, these changing technologies, this is going to be useful for people. I mean, you know, on the iOS devices, they've changed the from the 30-pin adapter to the... to the lightning adapter, I think it's called. As Apple likes to keep us on our toes with these things, that could come in useful for people. Interestingly, you mentioned about the Thunderbolt display coming with the old MagSafe adapter, Jordan, and you're absolutely correct, it does. But Apple shipped mine with a MagSafe adapter in the box.
That's good. I suppose you would need to.
Which I think is something new. I don't know how long they've been doing that, but I've got an adapter with mine.
I think they've been doing that ever since MagSafe 2 came out, simply because otherwise you wouldn't be able to use your Thunderbolt display. But that's nice that they're doing that. Normally you'd expect to have to fork out an extra few pounds for an adapter to, you know, make use of the expensive Apple product you purchased.
But so really, this MagSafe adapter keyring, just a little adapter with a loop goes on your keyring. It means that it's handy whenever you need to... swap between an old MagSafe power lead and new computer, or is it the other way around?
It's old power adapter, new
old
computer.
To new computer.
Yeah,
it's old power adapter, new computer. Yeah,
it's something I can see definitely being useful for the IT guy who walks around with his laptop in his bag. You know, obviously going on site or going to various employees to help fix their computer. If he has the old power adapter and that adapter on his keyring, he's covered for either laptop. So if he needs to use a MagSafe for a MagSafe 2 laptop, he's covered. So it's, I can see that being quite useful if you've got an existing power adapter.
Richard.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, one of the things that struck me looking at this is I don't understand, well, maybe they're just testing it out, but there's a much, much bigger market here if you had the ability to do this with a 30-pin to lightning adapter.
Would you want that on your keyring there?
God, yeah.
Actually, you know what? That's a great idea.
Because that would be a because it's one of the things that's a pain in the arse for people.
Right, guys, I'll tell you what, I'll edit this bit out of the show and we'll set up a Kickstarter project between the three of us tomorrow. We'll see if we can get the funding. If there's enough interest, then we can go ahead with it. And then we can sell it to Yahoo for 1.1 billion next week, because they're buying all sorts of rubbish these days.
Yeah, the Lightning one is...
Yeah, why didn't they do that first?
Much better. I don't
know. Why didn't they do that first? I don't understand.
It's because this one's aluminium, not plastic, that's why. I was going to say, for $15, it's not such a huge price. That's 10 of your pound sterling, or thereabouts. So, hot or not?
Hot.
Richard, we don't have that suspense music that X Factor and Britain's Got Talent use. Yeah, so that long pause there is just dead air.
It's just dead air.
I'm not going to go and find some, you know, suspense type music whilst we wait for your comment.
Yeah.
It's only a three-letter word, whether you go for hot or not.
I'm going for not.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. One hot, one not. What's my role here, guys? I've been trying to work that out for the last 23 episodes as well.
I'm going to say not is what you're going to say.
No, I think it's hot, actually. I mean, for the price, it's pretty cheap, and I can see how it's going to be pretty useful for some people. It's not going to appeal to everybody, but it's a nifty way of carrying around a small component that could otherwise be easily mislaid. So, yeah, I think it's hot. So two hots and a not from the northeast. So, okay. And anything else anybody wants to talk about before we wrap up the show?
Completely off topic. I was just intrigued. Has anybody been keeping their eye out tonight about the Xbox 360? Well, not the Xbox 360.
It's games, man. I can't be bothered. I haven't got time for games. I'm too old.
Did you watch it, Rich? Or?
I didn't watch it. I've just been keeping my eye on sort of, you know, websites and whatnot. But what's interesting, Johnny, is this is a real attack on the possibility of an Apple TV. It really is.
But have you seen the size of the bloody thing?
It's ugly, isn't it?
It's not just ugly, it's huge. It's like something from the 1970s.
I haven't seen a picture of it compared to anything else. I've just seen it on its own, surrounded by
just
black.
Think, that must have been the size of a small building. You know, it's only because of miniaturization that they've managed to get it down to about 2.5 feet wide.
I don't like the name Xbox One, because that's how I referred to the original Xbox, which was about the size of a small conservatory. So it's about the same size.
Yeah, I've just got no interest in these gaming consoles, really, I'm afraid.
I like the idea of everything being unified. I think that's good.
What does that mean?
You get rid of your, in theory, you can get rid of your TV box.
Well, apparently the tuner has to plug into the Xbox. It's got HDMI in. I don't know exactly, you know, there's no announcements of services.
Right.
Is it another half-thought-through thing from Microsloth?
No. You can get a cable box in the States if you're on Comcast, which just hooks straight in, and Xbox have a huge relationship with Sky over here. So I suspect for Sky customers, they'll be able to hook up their Sky HD box, and the Xbox will be their
controller.
Tuner. Yeah, and it will do everything for them, you know, DVR, whatever.
I think people should just turn these things off, get outside and go for a walk or a run.
It's going to be massive, I think.
Well, people are going to be massive if they don't go out for a walk or a run.
Ding. Very good.
On that note, Johnny, I think that's a good place to call it.
Okay, where can we find you on the interwebs, Richard?
At Rich Harkness is the best place on Twitter.
And Jordan?
At Jordan Merrick on Twitter, or sparsebundle.net.
Okay, do go and have a look at sparsebundle.net. It's a very interesting website from Jordan. You find me on Twitter at Johnny_Winter. And I think we've got a couple of Twitter things for the show, which you can probably find out about on our website, q.am. That's q-u-e.am. And you'll find Back to the Mac there. Okay, so until episode 24, it's good night from me, and it's good night from them. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
That was Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTM Podcast or at Q Broadcasting, or find us on the internet at q.am. That's q-u-e.am. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find him on the internet, www.tdmss.com. Thanks for listening.
Apple Macintosh.
I'll cut out 6 seconds of dead air to make it 43 minutes dead.
And also the 3 minutes of Rich's multi-million pound idea.
Yes, yeah. Of course. So down to 40 minutes.